Welcome. My name is Gilad Bernstein, and thank you for joining us for another episode of the AI and Faith podcast. On this podcast, we bring together experts from our community and thought leaders from around the world so that together we can learn the key lessons required to build the world where AI benefits humanity and all of us individually.
From our perceiving end, AI communicates to us and it can create an image of a holy ideas or of otherworldly ideas. But then how does it move us into a holy lifestyle? Well, it may not is of course, yeah, the challenge, right? And so just as an apocalypse is supposed to expand our mind and expand our vision of what God is doing and then give us some challenges to live out today, I'm thinking of 2 Peter as much as Revelation at this point, so too can AI do that as well. But the question is, will we use it in that way?
This week, we continue our 2026 deep dive into the many ways varying religions and faith traditions think about the deployment of AI across society. In this conversation, we will focus on how we can use the Bible to help us answer difficult questions about artificial intelligence in our modern lives. So let's get started. Thank you both for joining us. I am so grateful to have you both joining us for this conversation. And to kick this off, Douglas, please tell us a bit about yourself and your areas of focus.
Yes. Hey, great to be here. My name is Douglas Estes, and I'm Associate Professor of Religion at New College of Florida. And my interests are, well, first of all, technology and faith. And so that's why I'm here today. But my primary work is as a biblical scholar, and I also dabble in practical theology as well.
Wonderful. And Marcus?
Hi, I'm Marcus Schwarting. I am a research scientist at the State University of New York in Buffalo, New York. My work focuses on AI applied to problems in quantum mechanics and materials science, and I am the senior editor for AI and Faith.
We are very grateful to have you both. Now, Marcus, you guys have worked together before. You guys have some history of working together. Maybe tell us a little bit about how you met and how long you guys have been working together.
Sure. So I believe it was 2021. We met at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C., and the Museum of the Bible was hosting a two-day conference on AI for Bible translation and interpretation. And we had a number of different speakers there, including myself and including Douglas. And Douglas, at the end, towards the end of the conference, said, we should turn this into a book. And I had never thought of doing something like that before, but Douglas has a tremendous amount of experience in that area, and I was very glad to take part in that.
Wonderful. And Douglas, maybe tell us a little bit about the other things you've published as well.
Well, yes. I think the first thing I would probably mention is that way back in 2009, I published SimChurch, which was a theology of online churches with Zondervan. And that was met with a lot of skepticism and other emotions as people reacted to the idea of online. But post-pandemic, you know, it seems like, you know, just a normal option at this point. And I've also done some other books on technology, such as Braving the Future, where I look at what Christian faith looks like in the midst of a rapidly changing world on technology. But then, as I mentioned, I'm primarily a biblical scholar, so I've written a number of books on John. The Gospel of John, I do a lot with Greek linguistics, specifically sociolinguistics and interrogatives. I edited The Tree of Life, which was a scholarly compilation looking at the concept of the Tree of Life throughout biblical literature. So I've written quite a few papers on paradoxes, ancient paradoxical thought.
Yeah, absolutely. And really the breadth and depth of your work has been really inspirational to us. And of course, our audience is well familiar with Marcus because of his role as an editor for AI and Faith. Now, before we jump into the meat of the conversation, I do have one more question for you, Douglas. And that's about the difference between theologians and biblical scholars. And maybe you can spend a second just telling us what the difference actually is. And what does that practically mean? How would these different traditions tackle problems differently?
So the issue of the difference between theologians and biblical scholars came up in our pre-conversation, and there was some serious but also some fun, you know, conversational points. So first of all, I think I'll just say that in general, we can lump them together. Like from an academic perspective, we don't really distinguish them. But there are also, in a very practical way in the academic world, distinctions between biblical scholars and theologians. And I'm quick, and this is why it came up in our conversation, is that when somebody mentions theology, I'm quick to say, well, I'm a biblical scholar, right? As if to divorce myself from certain perspectives. But especially when it comes to like AI, I'll just give you my rough answer. But theologians are those that, even though they are connected to the biblical text, they're really thinking about how ideas and concepts that originate in scripture, how they can work together in our world today. Whereas as a biblical scholar, I am first and foremost trying to be in the world of the text itself. So I want to know what the text says, means, how it thinks, breathes, lives, understands it in a great depth. And only then do I want to bring what I know to the surface and apply as if the modern issues that we deal with are still within the realm of biblical ideas. And so this is the reason why the conclusions that I'll draw about AI might be radically different than a lot of theologians, even in my own tradition.
Absolutely. And this was just the perfect transition into really the meat of the conversation I'm hoping to have today. And I want to start by asking kind of the blatant question straight on, which is, I've read the Bible. It doesn't say anything about artificial intelligence in there. So starting with you, Douglas, why is the Bible even a place we should consider getting wisdom for this AI era?
Well, let me start with a counter, which is simply that as a Christian myself, we cannot not use the Bible. It has to be the starting point for any discussion about anything, really. Even if it doesn't seem to be totally applicable, it still has to inform us as a starting point, okay? And then we have the advantage of being able to appeal to church fathers, to modern theology, medieval theologians. I mean, there's just so much out there within the Christian tradition that we can utilize and we should. But I would say that AI really is like any other technology that was present in ancient society, but the Bible doesn't go into a lot of detail about. So it doesn't spend a lot of time talking about war chariots, when to use war chariots, when to not use war chariots, what's the ethics of war chariots. And we can even bring this to today where we have questions, say, for example, let's again leave AI out just for a second, but we have questions about nuclear weapons. Well, there are some analogous thought between nuclear weapons and war chariots. And so this is kind of the way that we can approach the text.
Absolutely. And Marcus, how do you think about that question?
Sure. I think about some of the central themes from scripture that apply to a variety of different ethical contexts. I think a lot of folks point to the Imago Dei as being very important when considering the uses of large language models. And I think folks often point to the Tower of Babel, for example, about the confusion of language and about social divisions. So I think that there is a lot to draw from that doesn't need to get into technological specifics, but provides timeless lessons.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you guys think about the Bible, are there specific books, sections, elements of it that you think are most relevant to those of us tackling these kind of modern questions? And what are a few of them? And Douglas, we'll have you start us off again.
So let me push back against that question a little bit. I mean, Please. It's a great question. It's very germane, you know, to the discussion, but I want to take a step back first. And the book that just came out, I edited it. Marcus was a great contributor in the book and very helpful for that book to come out. It's Artificial Intelligence for Bible Translation and Interpretation with T.N.D. Clark. And in that, I wrote an essay about called AI in the Bible, A Way Forward, right? And so it raised this question of how do we begin to understand AI in the Bible? And I'll just make it real simple. What I tried to do is I tried to take some of the work of Richard Hayes and Reuben Zimmerman to create a theory of interpretation for AI, which comes by being immersed in scripture, which allows us to perceive the implicit ethics as part of the symbolic world of the Bible. Now, what that means in simple language is that the biblical narratives and biblical instruction, they create in the reader an awareness of how to live as we live in those texts in our lives. And so based upon that, I would argue that actually all of the Bible is important and critical in order to understand how we use and what our ethics of AI will be. So I would resist picking one or two passages. And I know that people do, you know, people want to jump right to Revelation, or they want to jump right to the Imago Dei or Tower of Babel and these kind of, right? But I want to resist that as a starting point.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing that you said that resonates most with me from the Jewish tradition is the concept of Shabbat, the concept of the Sabbath, which has nothing to do with artificial intelligence. And I could even argue that there are maybe use cases of AI that allow you to observe Shabbat even more deeply and more meaningfully. But the idea that we humans require a time of ordinary and a time of special or holiness is a concept I think is very important for us to bring into this AI future, even though, like you said, it says nothing specifically about AI within the concept of Shabbat. Now, Marcus, what do you have to add to this whole concept?
Yeah, I was thinking that rather than providing what we might sort of port from biblical society to modern society as a legal framework, we draw from virtue. And biblical instruction gives us a strong plate for virtue ethics that we ought to be applying throughout history. And that's one of the aspects that really makes biblical wisdom timeless.
Yeah, absolutely. Douglas?
I was just going to add, actually, I think Shabbat is a great example of the way that we do this type of interpretation for AI. We know from the rabbinic period that people had lots of questions about how do we live out scripture.
Yeah.
And they debated it, they discussed it to, you know, and to try to get to the right answer. And this is an opportunity for us as believers to be able to look at something like AI, but then go back to scripture, wrestle with it in the same way, and then bring it forward to us today. So, I mean, like myself, I think Shabbat would be is a great example of something where we then learn how to do that, how to practice that, how to live that, and then AI fits into that rather than the other way around.
Absolutely. That's a vision that for me is very exciting to think about, how we can use these technologies not to remove us from our tradition, but to actually live our tradition even further, even more so. Now, before we jump into the real meat of it, what specifically we can learn from the Bible about AI, I want to ask the opposite question. How should people of faith not use the Bible to make these important decisions and distinctions? What are some mistakes or follies that people run into? Marcus, you want to start us off?
I am really wary of situations where folks are cultivating something like a relationship with a large language model, for example, and are using it for, say, spiritual confession or spiritual growth or spiritual relationship. I think that this is true across many of the world's religions, but for Christianity, there is such a strong communal aspect. We see that both in the book of Acts and in the epistles. We see that in the Old Testament. And we see that throughout church history, that although there is a great deal to be learned from introspection and individualism, our faith is practiced communally. We are a church body. And the body ought not be separated. I believe Galatians makes that quite clear. And so I'm concerned that Christians may defer to using a large language model over, say, a trusted mentor or building relationships with fellow churchgoers. That's one thing I tend to look out for.
Yeah, absolutely. There's this Jewish, I think more of an Orthodox concept of chavruta, a study partner. And there's been a lot of debate on an AI act as chavruta. And I'm pretty sure, I'm not speaking on behalf of anyone, but I'm pretty sure most Jews would say no, the AI cannot, maybe it can help the study session, but it cannot replace your human study partner and mate with that. And Douglas, before we jump into really the learnings from the Bible, any other kind of lessons for people of faith, how to maybe not use the Bible to interpret AI?
Yeah, two things. The first thing is I want to just tag on to what Marcus said, which is great, the idea of being having community, and also as what you were saying about human in the loop aspect of trying to use AI to further our growth. But one thing we should definitely avoid doing is we have to avoid using AI to help us understand the Bible on using AI. Otherwise, we will create a circular reductionism at some point, yeah, and it will shortcut the process for us. So we don't want to do that. And then the second thing is, though, in a more general way, this is going to just continue to be a challenge for us because, but it's always been a challenge. There's always been the Scylla and Charybdis, right, of either a very over-literalized interpretation of the Bible or a sort of broad allegorical approach to biblical text. And these two have always been sort of at the extreme end. We've got to find a way to be able to have good, solid biblical interpretation in such a way that it enables us to grow ourselves and also to grow our faith communities through the use of AI.
Yeah, just briefly, I would build on that as well. About a year ago, I was asked to write for the Lausanne Light, which is the quarterly report from the Lausanne Convention about AI for different biblical study type tools. And a couple of things that I sort of wanted to foreground was the importance of the hermeneutic spiral in thinking through scripture. So I think that's an idea that a lot of folks attribute originally to Augustine, but maybe more modern folks might attribute to someone like Gadamer, where you are sort of iteratively spiraling inwards towards better and better understanding of a text. And I would not want to put an AI in a position that it is sort of short-circuiting that process and just sort of driving someone to a terminus that may not actually be a terminus.
Yeah.
And then also, I think there is a sense in which AI developers might pitch a product saying, if it is better than the average individual at X, then everybody should be using it. I think this is a pretty common argument with autonomous vehicles. And maybe that argument has a place in some circles. However, I don't think that the average is necessarily as descriptive as we might like. So given the autonomous vehicles example, for instance, if I have a group of individuals in a part of the United States that are better than average drivers, and the autonomous vehicle is basically an epsilon better than an average driver, their experience is worse, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think it's fair to compare to an average in the situation of autonomous vehicles. I also don't think it's fair to compare to the average if we're talking about something like doctrinal understanding or exegesis, right? We ought not compare an AI model to the average churchgoer or the average person who is a part of a religious community, because we don't go to just the average person
Absolutely.
To ask for advice. And even if you do a Google search, you're often pointed to commentaries and resources that have been created by human expertise. And that would be where I would point somebody who has a question about a parable rather than asking a large language model. I think they will get a much deeper and richer understanding from reading that commentary or talking to that mentor instead of just having a few turns with a large language model.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think your point there about how in many realms of life, we're not looking for the average level of expertise is exactly right. I mean, the easy example is a doctor. If something is really wrong with you, you don't want the answer from the average person walking down the street. You want an expert who spent a long time studying your disease or your ailment or whatever is going on. I think that's a really, really strong analogy. Now, with so much of kind of great background out of the way, I want to dive straight into the meat of the conversation, which is what can we learn from the Bible as we begin to bring AI into the world? As you guys know, as our audience knows, you know, the great commoditization came into effect about 6 years ago, and we have seen AI rolled into business, into healthcare, into education, into faith, into romance, into effectively every realm of human life and the human experience. And I'm curious, we'll go back and forth a few times, starting with Douglas and Gordon and Marcus. What are one or two lessons that we can learn from the Bible to apply AI in a way that is both pro-human, pro-humanity, and ethical?
Let me start with practical theology for this question instead of the Bible. I'm probably going backwards, but that's okay. So one of the things that people who are actively engaged in ministry, and I'm going to suggest that this is true not just in the Christian tradition, but also in the Jewish tradition, for sure, other traditions, which is that clergy, pastors, priests, rabbis, they all complain that their people don't read the text enough, right?
Yep.
And so my whole life I've heard, you know, discipleship is so low, reading the Bible is so low, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that AI represents a great opportunity for people of faith in person and church because it can help us to grow in our discipleship. We can use AI tools to help us to understand the Christian faith better. And also, it can help us with engagement, with Bible engagement and reading the Bible and absorbing the Bible. I know that we're not there yet. And so what I'm saying now is it's at least as much more a vision of the future of how AI will be used than it is today. To me, today, AI is kind of in the AOL dial-up stage, right, of things where it might work, it might not work. But certainly within a few years, there ought to be a way for AI to change discipleship metrics across the board.
That one definitely resonates. As a Jewish person living in America, right, most Jews in America do not speak Hebrew. And they are reading the Bible and they are reading prayers in a language they don't understand. And I have no doubt that AI could definitely help them understand it better and maybe even find new depth of spirituality. Okay, Marcus, you're in the hot seat. What's one thing that we can learn from the Bible for AI deployment in our world?
Sure. So I was thinking I might draw a bit from the passage that I wrote on for the book that Douglas and I edited together. And I had two passages that I talked about. The first was Exodus 21, which is a part of Old Testament case law regarding an ox that gores an individual and the owner's responsibility for the ox that gores that individual. I know that a lot of contributors to the book and a lot of the discussion has been primarily around how should individuals be engaging or not engaging with AI? As somebody who develops AI tools for a living in a lot of different spaces and is really trying to think hard about being ethical in that space, that passage from Exodus really struck a chord with me because it is an ancient precedent for establishing responsibility for the things that we own or the things that we create. So there's sort of a couple of components to it. The first is regarding an ox that gores an individual. The second is about somebody who goes out and digs a hole, and then another person's donkey falls into that hole. And so the individual who dug the hole is responsible for the donkey that fell in. To me, that is a situation that can be applied to developers who are releasing tools without doing due diligence. And I think it's in some ways a warning, not to say that all of the Old Testament ought to be considered normative, but that we ought to be really careful about the ramifications of the tools. And if somebody comes to us and says, hey, I found this really dangerous exploit, I've identified where models are suggesting self-harm or are misleading people. That's the situation where developers, I think, have a responsibility to take those issues very seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. I spent some time at the Allen Institute, the Paul Allen Artificial Intelligence Research Institute, and their much less eloquent version of that is the AI ate my homework shall not be an acceptable excuse. And at the end of the day, we should all be responsible for our own actions in this world, including the secondary and tertiary. I love that example. Okay, Douglas, what's another lesson we can draw from the Bible?
Yes. When we look at Bible passages and understanding different passages and how it relates to AI, I did something different. I really wanted to tackle the issue of AI in the book of Revelation. It's one of those things where if you haven't read Revelation, people think, oh, yeah, surely AI is in there, right, as part of the mark of the beast. Or maybe if you have read Revelation, you still think that AI is in there because, you know, you see all the different holy things that are going on and unholy things going on, and you're quick to, you know, put it in with the unholy category. But the truth is there's actually a lot of parallels, I think, between ancient Jewish apocalypses and AI. Like one of the parallels is that it is ancient apocalypse is a text that we use to envision holy things so that it can challenge us to have holy living. And in a similar way, AI is also a text because it communicates to us. So Like nuclear weapons, shovels, COVID vaccine, these things don't communicate to us.
Yeah.
But from our perceiving end, AI communicates to us and it can create an image of a holy ideas or of otherworldly ideas. But then how does it move us into a holy lifestyle? Well, it may not is of course
yeah.
the challenge, right? And so just as an apocalypse is supposed to expand our mind and expand our vision of what God is doing and then give us some challenges to live out today, I'm thinking of Second Peter as much as Revelation at this point, so too can AI do that as well. But the question is, will we use it in that way? And that's where it really comes into the ethics and use of AI. AI is a beautiful invention, but we've got to use it wisely and we've got to use it well to really make a difference in our world.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And then Marcus, maybe one more shot at this or one more opportunity to tell us another thing that we should be thinking about from the Bible as we apply AI in our world.
The second contribution that I had for the book was a way that I think maybe the Bible is perhaps being misapplied to the AI use
yeah.
case. And it is the parable of the master who gives talents to his three servants, and to one he gives five, another three, and another one. And the individuals with five and three go out and double their money. Not quite sure how they did that. You know, Jesus does not elaborate on what mechanisms they use, but the third servant with one talent buries it and then digs it up when the master returns. And I have heard on several occasions people say that, well, if you're a church community and you're not leveraging this technology or these tools, or you're not using the data of your congregation to sort of help their spiritual growth, you are sort of looking a gift horse in the mouth, or you are the servant that is burying the one talent.
Yeah.
And for a number of reasons, I don't think that is a situation where that parable ought to be readily applied. Individuals' data is not fungible in the same way that currency is. And it's not something that perhaps ought to be bought or sold for the purpose of a startup, right? Like, there are instances where we need to be really careful about how either over-enthusiasm about AI or a despondency around AI guides laypersons and lay leaders' decision-making around these tools.
That was another incredible example. Now, before we run out of time, is there one or two more things that either of you want to share, either from the book or from the Bible itself, that we should be considering as we deploy AI around the world?
Well, so there's a lot of great pieces in our book that collates 40 different passages of scripture with individual reactions to it. One of my favorites from somebody I deeply respect is John Dyer out of Dallas Theological Seminary. And he drew from the book of Deuteronomy, again, from more of a legal framework that's being set up about instructions regarding when you build a house, you ought to place a parapet on top of that house. So we are recognizing that structures are being built, right? That is a part of civilization and a part of development, right? But that development comes with risks. And we know that folks in those cultures often slept on the roof because it was cooler. So setting up a guardrail, a parapet around the top of those buildings was just something that wasn't just encouraged, but it was strong enough to be actually incorporated into a legal framework. And I think that that's a great lesson for us as folks are developing these tools, as they're deploying these tools, or even as they are considering when and how to grant epistemic authority to these tools, is you can use them, right? We have the house, but you need to have a parapet. You need to have guardrails. You can explore up on top of the roof, but if you go beyond that, you will get hurt. So set up a boundary for yourself.
I love that. That definitely reminds me of, you know, my favorite one from the Jewish tradition, which is, of course, pikuach nefesh, or preservation of the soul and the life. And the idea that we certainly want to make sure that we create an AI into the world that understands that human life is special and unique, and that there's something that is really important in preserving and protecting the human life. And if we could train an AI to do that, that certainly seems like an AI that can uplift and benefit all of us. Now, before we run out of time, I do want to switch perspective just slightly and ask you about your own personal use of artificial intelligence, and maybe even give you one more opportunity to talk about any sort of biblical lessons that apply in this world. And our audience will know that we've done this a lot throughout 2026, asking people of different faith backgrounds and traditions about their own experience so we can learn from one another and about the best ways to use AI to further our own belief and our own faith practices. So Douglas, I'll ask you first, have you used artificial intelligence in your own personal religious observance? And if so, how?
I have primarily used AI in my professional reading of the text, less so in my own personal reading of the text or my personal spiritual life. And I think that that's partly just me because I gravitate towards the using the tools that feel academic for academic things. I stand by what I said that, you know, we're kind of in the AOL dial-up stage of things. So as a scholar, there's a lot of confabulations and hallucinations that fortunately are out there when you engage AI on a scholarly level. But at the same time, it's still a very useful tool, and it just keeps getting better and better and more accurate.
Absolutely. And Marcus, have you used it in your own personal observance?
No, I can't say I've really used it in my own personal observance. And I don't think that I am categorically against it, but I just feel like I ought to be very cautious. And I haven't found a situation where I felt that it was necessary for my own spiritual observance.
Absolutely. And then my second question, starting with Douglas again, is what's a lesson that the AI community, those of us building AI in the world, can learn from your faith? Obviously, we spent much of our conversation today speaking about that. But is there one practical thing for those of us actually deploying AI that we can learn from Christianity?
I have a general principle, which is as a biblical scholar, you have to be concerned about the details. And I think that I don't have an objection to the technocrat and move fast and break things in general, I suppose. But at the same time, we've got to get the details right. And this is really important when it comes to matters of faith, because if people are using AI and they're coming to bad or problematic conclusions about faith, or it's damaging their faith or damaging their practice, then these are details that we've got to get right.
Absolutely. And Marcus?
I think there's a bit of a joke going around right now that, well, the LLM isn't very good at the thing I'm an expert in, but thank goodness it's an expert at everything I have no expertise in. And I've seen that happen several times where someone will tell me like, oh, well, it's at peak performance when it's writing this kind of code, but it's only at an undergrad level when it's doing theoretical physics. And oh, by the way, I'm a theoretical physicist.
Yep.
So, stuff like that. And I think that, and I've even talked to Christians who are in the tech space saying, well, thank goodness, a few more years from now, we won't need seminaries because LLMs will just be able to provide all of that for us. And I think it's a bit of that conceit of like, well, there's actually quite a bit of depth here. One shouldn't assume that when they're looking at a body of water, it's only 6 inches deep. And I think that that's an easy temptation when you are using AI quite frequently and it is generally doing an okay job for the things you're asking it to do. And so for Christian developers who are building these AI tools, thinking that it will be great as a spiritual advisor or a therapist or a pastor or an apologist, right? Unless you actually have really deep expertise in that field, perhaps don't think too highly of the answers you're seeing if it's just like, oh, well, that seems all right. Because the cracks are apparent to experts in the field.
And I love what you said there, just because when you see a body of water, don't assume it's 6 inches deep is really good, because AI is so good at kind of peanut buttering over everything and make everything seem kind of simple and direct, when of course we know the most important questions are usually anything but. Now, I'm so grateful to both of you for joining us. I'm so grateful to both of you for being a part of our community and helping us bring AI into the world in a way that is safe and responsible for all of us individually, and of course for humanity as large. Now, before I let you go, we do have a lightning round, two questions, 15 seconds apiece, and Marcus is going to kick us off. So your first question is, what's one thing you've been reading for fun?
So right now I am reading an absolutely excellent book. It might be in my top three of all time. It's called The Feast by Margaret Kennedy, not sponsored because it's written in like the 1930s, or sorry, 1950s. And it is excellent. It is about a seaside hotel in Cornwall, and you have a number of characters, but seven of those characters each represent one of the seven deadly sins. Is
cool.
Very good, very well written.
Awesome. And Douglas?
I am not proud to say that I'm reading nothing because I'm writing nonstop. So I can tell you what I'm writing that's interesting, but I can't tell you what I'm reading that's interesting.
Well, give us one of those.
Okay, so what I'm writing is I'm actually finishing up a book on interpersonal conflict resolution. So that should be out hopefully next year.
Wonderful. And you're going to start us off, Douglas, on this last one. What is one fun thing you have planned for the summer?
Well, I just got back from Hawaii and Alaska. So I think those both count as fun things. Went with my family on vacation. So yes, that was the fun thing that we did. But unfortunately, it's over. I'm back to work now. Back to not reading, but writing.
Absolutely. And Marcus?
So in about a month, my wife and I are meeting her parents for a few days in the Lake District, and then we are all headed back to where I am currently, which is in St. Andrews, Scotland, to spend a few days just seeing the sights, walking along the coast. It's going to be a lovely time.
Absolutely. Well, thank you both for joining us, and thank you for the work you do in the world. And of course, thank you to all of you in the AI and Faith community for joining us for another episode of the AI and Faith podcast. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Stay tuned to listen to more conversations and interviews with experts from around the world. In the meantime, follow and rate our podcast on your favorite podcast platform and share it with your friends. Don't forget to follow us on social media. We are on LinkedIn, X, and Blue Sky. Thank you for joining us.